Welcome back. And of course, we always like to have you guys check us out on Facebook. And where else, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And I need to make sure we mention it. You and I talked about it off air a little bit. Check it out online. You don't have to wait for the show. You can punch it in and look at past shows or listen to past shows. And it's
up awesome. There every week.
Every week. Check it out. A couple buddies of mine, I had talked to, one of them works at down at Kevin's Mobile down here in Red Wing. He had listens every week. He's like, it's much easier to listen this way because I'm usually not driving a ton. And I said, perfect. Keep listening. So we appreciate that. So kind of cool. Well, let's jump into it. Altitude sickness. There's a couple different names for it. One is going to be acute mountain sickness, high altitude cerebral edema, and high altitude pulmonary edema. And really the cause of it, what is really the cause, is not having enough time for the body to react to changes in air pressure and oxygen levels. And that happens at elevation. The higher up you go, the thinner the air is, or the less oxygen there is. And typically, anything above 8,000 feet is considered high altitude. They say, doctors and others say, anything, even flying from New Orleans to Colorado, can necessitate a few days of adjustment. There are three kinds of those sicknesses I just mentioned. Acute mountain sickness is the least severe of the bunch. It might be something easy to write off as just feeling sick or hungover. They include symptoms of nausea, churning stomach, and dizzy spells. And they come from standing up too quickly. And it is self-treatable. Then there's the high-altitude cerebral edema, fancy way someone has a brain capillary that's begun to leak due to hypoxia or oxygen deprivation. People suffering from, and it's HACE, is when I went through ski patrol training. That's one of the things you learn about. They appear drunk. They appear clumsy, confused, and sleep. Boy, that's me all the time. That's self-induced,
oh,
I guess.
No.
The form of altitude sickness is dangerous enough that it requires immediate medical attention and can lead to coma or death. High altitude pulmonary edema happens in the blood vessels in the lungs. So you have cerebral, which is the brain, and pulmonary, which is the lungs.
Two things you need.
Right. And what happens there, that's one of the bad ones, because what'll happen is you have liquid or fluid that starts to fill the lungs up. When you can shortness of breath, you're coughing. And if you're coughing and you have any pink fluid at all, you need to get to a lower altitude. Acute mountain sickness is less dangerous than the other two. Obviously, if you're descending too quickly, that can be really kind of one of those things, the other two versions of altitude sickness. So what you want to do, earliest signs, it feels like a hangover. Preventing it is not to ascend too quickly. Don't go up in altitude too quickly. Or the other problem is doing a lot of activity at an altitude you're not prepped for. So you may be at the same altitude. Let's say it's 10,000 feet. Typically, that's one of those areas. It's a mid-mountain or top mountain, depending on the area you're in. And if you're doing some climbing to go up there, usually it's a leave from 8 and go to 10. And also, it's sleeping. Where are you sleeping? Are you sleeping at 8,000? And are you giving yourself enough rest? That's a key.
Right.
So if you come in from low-lying areas, give yourself a day or two to acclimate. True acclimation, I don't know if you know this, Ava, but true acclimation, you know how long it takes to truly acclimate your body and have the oxygen level in your body to stabilize with that less oxygen level, so your body will have a higher level of oxygen in the blood?
How long? 24 hours?
30 days.
Shut up.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep, I did some research on that. Important is make sure you don't take sedatives or drink alcohol excessively before bedtime. It already slows down your breathing as far as the altitude. You're going to slow it down more doing that. Earliest signs of altitude sickness feels like a hangover, as I said before. And what do you do? So it's one of those things. If you're in a situation like that, you start to feel it and you have access to lower altitude, drop down, because it can be serious. So drop and do that. one of the things, too, is when you're working at high altitudes, your heart rate, obviously, and your respiration rate goes up. So you're breathing a lot more. The issue when you're breathing a lot more is you also are expelling water or air, water vapor. You are becoming dehydrated. And what you don't realize is how fast you can be dehydrated. So keep fluids coming. Keep that rolling, because a lot of times the dehydration can be a big part of headaches and everything else that goes on. And really a piece that you need to make sure that you have under control. And fitness level and conditioning is a big thing. Make sure that you have the conditioning done and really work on keeping that nailed down. this is kind of odd, kind of an odd stat, but there's over 200 corpses on Mount Everest, about 26,000 feet.
I know,
up.
That's so crazy.
And they are now part of the frozen landscape. They don't remove them, they leave them. And
well, could, yeah.
Yep.
It's crazy.
And they had a test of Sherpas in 2006. 43% of the Sherpas, those are the guys that carry the packs and everything else for the mountain climbers, who had participated, had previously experienced one symptoms when climbing significantly higher than their resting altitudes. Conversely, studies show exposure to extreme altitudes can cause permanent changes in the body. The brains of professional mountaineers will sometimes shrink as they lose brain cells, which causes cognitive deficiencies. And in fact, 2008, in a Scientific American, they did a study of 35 climbers with high altitude experience and found brain damage in almost all of them, even if it wasn't outwardly noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid of the brain, that situation, but just understand that there's ways that you can prevent that. And one of the biggest reasons that you want to be careful of it is if you're out and you're hunting and you're working hard, and let's say you're not as in good a shape as your buddies, take care. Make sure that you are taking your fluids. Make sure that you're understanding that the reaction to your altitude can be a sign that there's something else going on. So just understand those pieces of the puzzle, I think, is extremely important. So let's move on to positivity, shall we?
Please do.
Actually, it was positive, providing people some help that they may not know they needed. Or in other words, little known facts that really never really mattered. That's what I'm here for.
Right.
That's what we're here for. Out of Maryland, a cool story. A girl, age 12, wins the top fishing prize of Master Angler Milestone. And she may be only 12 years old. It hasn't stopped the Maryland girl from becoming the state's Master Angler. She was from Perrysville, or is from Perrysville, Maryland, an impressive fisherman. She's only a decade, not even a decade old, or just over a decade old. Is that crazy or what? So, Fish Maryland's Master Angler Award, surprising everybody. Seventh grader's been proudly fishing since she was only 2 years old. Her dad was the first one to take her out. The love of fishing continued. This is pretty crazy. There's three levels of this milestone award, with the Master Angler being the highest achievement. The Milestone Award recognizes the skillful anglers who catch trophy-sized catches of different species caught after January 1st, 2019, according to the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Each milestone is marked with a certificate and a limited edition Fish Maryland Milestone sticker. A year ago, that would have been when she was 11, unintentionally checked off the angler award after she caught three different species, all meeting the minimum length requirement. She said, then I got all kind of obsessed with getting citations until I got to the second stage. And then she asked her dad, how many stages are there? And she said she'd accidentally reached the expert award by catching five different species and decided to keep chasing a top prize of 10 different species. She would go out with her dad every weekend and try to catch 10 different species. A rainstorm or even heavy snow didn't stop them from going out, which is pretty cool. That's hardcore.
Yeah, no kidding.
After a month of going fishing and hoping to hit all additional species in length, she caught her final fish and immediately knew she'd won the coveted prize. She said, I was so shocked. I was like, Dad, did I actually do this? And then she was literally jumping up and down. And so here's what it was. She had a chain pickerel, which is like a northern pike, 27 inch, or white perch, 13, bluegill, 11. Those aren't small fish. A white perch at 13 inches, that's a good fish. The bluegill, 11 inches, that's solid. A yellow perch, 14 inches, that's crappie, 15 inches. Smallmouth bass, 20. Those are no slouch fish. Hickory shad, 18 inches. Carp, 33. Pumpkin seed, 10. And American shad, 24. And eventually she was named Master Angler this last May. And she got the award at Bass Pro Shops, which is pretty cool. She even joked about her dad not yet receiving a Master Angler Award. Now she's getting cocky. How about that?
Yeah.
Dad says, I'm working on mine, but I don't have it yet. I only have four, he said. She encourages, Maryland dad encourages other dads to take their daughters out. And whether it's there or it's in Minnesota, wherever we are heard and you guys hear us, take your kids out and go fishing. There's, in every state, there is this kind of thing going on. And get them hooked on fishing. There's nothing that's more rewarding for the kids, and it's also a lifelong sport, and it's something you could do together and enjoy this deal. And Moore, the girl age 12, says she thinks she's caught over 10,000 different fish.
Wow.
Yep. it may be even higher. Lucy's been an avid angler as long as she's been able to hold a fishing rod. Love of the sport's almost unmatched, her dad says. And a preferred method of fishing is actually on the fly. So she's a fly fisherman, which is really cool. Oh,
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I would fail miserably, but I'd try.
She's got some other fish, from exotic clown knife fish to a muskie. She does it all. Her love for things outside in the water inspired her to one day be a marine biologist. So how about that?
Yeah, that's awesome. She's got big dreams. I love
that.
Well,
you know what? It's.
I wish I knew what I wanted to do when I was 12.
I wish I knew what I wanted to do when I grow up.
I know.
Right now.
Right now.
Maybe I'm going to have to go reevaluate.
You need some help?
Yeah, I might need. I don't know. Probably.
I'm sorry.
I know. It is what it is. Story. This kind of ties in with one of the conversations we had earlier with Tom Nelson. Remember, they were talking about, the administration was talking about introducing grizzlies into the West.
This is a remember we this? Talked about this
with Tom Nelson out of Washington State, Seattle area. Yeah. He's an ESPN radio host out there. Idaho hunters bitten by a grizzly describes the surprise attack like playing tug of war with your dog. The Idaho hunter who was attacked and bitten, a 20-year-old, near Caribou Targhee National Forest, bitten by a grizzly bear, is now recounting the harrowing attack, saying it was like playing tug-of-war with your dog, but he was playing it with my arm and ripping it apart.
Oh, my gosh.
Riley Hill made the comment as doctors are now estimating it will take him 2 months to recover following the attack of the grizzly on Sunday, September 1st. He said he and another gentleman were archery hunting for elk when the bear lunged at him. An investigation of the attack revealed that the hunters acted in self-defense during the surprise encounter with the bear from a very close distance. He told the East Idaho News the incident began with a loud thud and that he heard Myers yell, "Oh, crap, that's a bear."
That's not okay.
No, that's not okay. you see, and this is where being able to work at high altitudes and run forest run and not be having altitude sickness would be really important. See how that ties in?
No kidding.
He reportedly dropped his bow and, using a handgun, managed to fire off four shots at the bear before he sank his teeth into his arm and started flinging him around. Myers, using his own firearm, then started to shoot at the bear. I was having to pick my shots carefully. By then, the bear's on top of Riley, and Riley's shoulders are between its front feet and legs are kind of kicked out from its stomach. He couldn't see anything Riley was doing. You just see the bear on him. When Braxton hit it, I could feel the bullets hitting the bear through my arm.
No.
Yep. He wasn't hitting my arm, but he could feel the repercussion from the bullets hitting the bear. A total of 24 bullets were used to take down the bear. And the website said he used his first aid skills, as you remember, to Boy Scouts, to apply a tourniquet around his arm before he was airlifted to a local medical facility. The hunters later mentioned to East Idaho News they learned the bear had a reputation among local ranchers for killing their livestock and was dubbed King of the Hill. They had a name for it. The bear has always been a problem up there for cattle. There's a lot of farmers that are pretty happy with us because they took out the bear that was eating their cattle. It was a fighting bear. Another bear or some animal had torn one of its ears off, and that was the ear that was facing uphill, and so it didn't hear us coming down until we were on the side of the good ear. You imagine? So that bear must have had to have been startled. The bear reportedly was startled, yep, and it was burrowing into a day bed. And Myers is now preparing for an October 12th wedding with his fiancée, in which he asked his Myers to be his best man. A lot of people say they'll take a bullet for my friend. Well, I got mauled by a bear for mine. How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
It's scary.
That is crazy. No, thanks.
No, I not my mind. Story coming out of Michigan. A new era of anti-hunting propaganda is seen in Michigan and other states. It's been almost 20 years since the bout of animal rights and anti-hunter groups, not counting the wolf debate that goes on in all the states. So, you know, we're very familiar with that going on in Wisconsin. In 2004, Michigan became the 41st state in the nation to legalize the hunting of mourning doves, the country's number one game bird. It was a limited open. In just six counties across the southern border of the Lower Peninsula, fewer than 30,000 doves were killed, 4,900 licenses out of a statewide estimate population of 4 million birds. Despite that fact, animal rights and anti-hunting groups spent $30,000 to garner 160,000 signatures, call a referendum, put the public to a vote, and the 05-06 seasons were suspended, and that was the last of them. So we're going to continue on with that story next week, but there's other elements that are going on for you guys across the United States. Be aware of them. And I think understanding what are threats to your hunting rights are definitely something that you want to be aware of. And it's unfortunate. And
but be aware.
Yeah, be aware of that. And hey, you know what? Have a good weekend out there. Going to be beautiful across the Midwest as far as what I can see. How about you just get out and enjoy it? Be safe. Have fun out there. For the Valley Outdoors, Ava and Eric, we are out.